Okay. We are now continuing with the sixth Mishnah, which we already started, but we went back to the fifth. We even started discussing the sixth Mishnah. Let me just recount very quickly what we already discussed. We said that the next Mishnah starts with Yehoshua ben Prachya and Nitai Ha'arbeli, and Yehoshua ben Prachya, the Abarbanel, says was the Rebbe of Yeshu HaNotri, of the founder of Christianity. The founder of Christianity. And we said that his name was Yeshua, and with an ayin at the end, but we refer to him as Yeshu, which is the Rosh Tevos of Yemach Shemo V'Zichro. I read you a censored out portion of the Gemara in Sota that says that Yehoshua ben Prachya had run away to Egypt to escape the wrath of Yanai HaMelech, who killed out all of the Chachomim, and on his way back came with his students, one of them Yeshu, and they stopped at an inn, and Yehoshua ben Prachya commented how nice the inn was, and Yeshu thought he was talking about the woman innkeeper, and he said, yeah, but her eyes are not that nice. And he said, that's what your mind is on, the woman innkeeper. And he put him in cherem. And he came three times to ask Mechila, and Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya, twice he came to ask Mechila, and Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya refused him. The third time he came, and Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya was in the middle of saying Kriya Shema, and he intended to forgive him, and he motioned to him to wait, and he understood that he was pushing him away again, and he went off the derech and served idolatry and began to create a new religion and separated himself from the Chachamim and rebelled against them, basically, which we'll see in one second what exactly he did. And the Gemara learns from here a lesson that a person should never reject someone with both hands. But the right hand should be makariv, and the left hand push away. And the Gemara says the same thing we learn from what Elisha did to Gehazi, also pushed him away with both hands, wasn't proper. And Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov did to Timnah, who was the mother of Amalek, and they also rejected her completely, and eventually she married Eliphaz ben Esav and had Amalek, who we know how much trouble we have and continue to will have to from Amalek. So that is one source in the Gemara about Yeshu. Another source is in the Gemara in Sanhedrin. And the Gemara says the following. The Gemara says that 40 days before they would execute someone, so they would send out a cruise. They'd send out an announcement that so-and-so is going to be executed, and if anybody has testimony concerning him, should come forth and testify or whatever. So they wouldn't execute someone without giving a total chance of knowing that they were executing him with justice. Then the Gemara brings down the following. The Gemara says that on Erev Pesach, they hung Yeshu. Hung means over here crucified. But it doesn't really mean crucified. What it means is the following. When they would stone somebody to death who was liable to the punishment of stoning, and stoning was done not by throwing little rocks at the person, but by throwing the person off a ledge that was the height of two persons high. In other words, about 12 feet high, with his hands tied behind him and his feet tied so he couldn't break the fall. And he was drugged. The women of Yerushalayim used to bring very strong wines with drugs in them so he would feel no pain. They drugged him up, and basically he was, anesthetized. And then they threw him off this ledge. Usually that killed him. If that didn't kill him, what?
Wasn't there a stone attached?
No. They threw him off the ledge. If that didn't kill him, if it killed him, fine. If it didn't kill him, then the two witnesses who testified against him take a boulder that it took two people to lift. One of them held it and threw it down on him.
From that height.
And that usually did it. If it didn't, then they did it again. But usually the person died the first time. These death penalties were only carried out. The Gemara says that a Sanhedrin that killed somebody once in 70 years was considered a Beis Din of murderers, because it very rarely happened. Usually, in order to fulfill a death penalty, you had to have witnesses who not only witnessed the crime, but warned the person ahead of time, and he committed the crime within a few seconds of their warning, and the person had to accept the warning. So under normal circumstances, they never gave out a death penalty. Torah prescribed it. The purpose of the death penalty is not a deterrent, and it's not to get rid of the person, because God can get rid of the person and punish him in the next world. The purpose of the death penalty was to give this person an atonement for his sin. If he did tshuva and he was killed in the manner the Torah said, it atoned for his soul. If it didn't fit the exact conditions, then there was never a death penalty, and we let the Rabbanim take care of him. However, what they did do is, under certain circumstances, put the person away so he couldn't harm other people. In any case, so it says, so anybody who was stoned was then hung right before sunset and taken down within a few minutes. Hung means they took a stick in the ground with a cross stick, and they tied his hands. He was dead already. They didn't do this to living people. He was dead already. And they hung him for the duration of the day, till sunset. You couldn't hang him more than till sunset. And then you had to bury him. This is where we learn that a person who dies has to be buried that day. If he dies in the day, he has to be buried before sunset. If he dies at night, he has to be buried. Usually we don't leave him overnight in Yerushalayim, but at least he has to be buried by the next sunset. So they would tie him up right before sunset, and as one was tying the first hand, somebody was tying the second hand, and the second person was untying the first hand. So he was only hung up for a few seconds to fulfill what the Torah said to do, and then he was buried. That was the Jewish way. The Romans crucified people and killed them that way. They hung them up like that, alive, until they would die, tortured them. It was not Jewish. In any case, so the Gemara says, according to the Christian Bible, the Jews did not kill Yashka. Even though we are blamed by them for being God killers, which is a little bit of an oxymoron, right? How in the world do you kill a God? If you killed him, he wasn't God. And if he was God, then what difference does it make if we killed him? He was still alive. But in any case, the religion doesn't make too much sense altogether, so this is just another oxymoron of Christianity. But according to their Bible, we didn't kill Yashka. We gave him over to the hands of the Romans, and they killed him. But according to the Gemara Taka, we killed him. If this is the Yeshu that of Christianity fame, there's an argument amongst the Rishonim whether in fact this was Yeshu or not, that Yeshu or not. Because that Yeshu was killed way before this time, in the time of Yoshua ben Prachya, and this is talking about at least 40 years before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. In any case, so it's a question whether this, but it says that they hung him, meaning that they stoned him to death, because he was a Macharif or Megadev. He was a person who preached heresy and cursed God, and that's why he was killed. And they did this on Erev Pesach. On Erev Pesach, they hung him up, meaning not really Erev Pesach, but the day before, because they didn't sit on Erev Yontif or Erev Shabbos. And they killed him because he was a Mesis or Mediach. He made other people sin. And it's interesting, according to those who say that this was that Yeshu, there are similarities from the following. The Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, and the Gemara says that usually they didn't make this announcement 40 days before the person was killed. And here they did because he was Karov L'Malchus. He was close to the government, and out of fear for the government, they wanted to make sure that there was nobody who would come to testify in his defense. So they covered all bases. That's one of the ideas. This was not that Yeshu, because this Yeshu was Adarabba. He was an enemy of the Roman government. He wasn't close to the Roman government, because he was he preached that the Roman government was going to be overturned, and he was the Messiah. In any case, but the next part does have some similarities to Christianity. The Gemara says like this. Tana Rabbanan, Chamisha Talmidim Hoyu Lo LiYeshu. Yeshu had 5 students. According to Christianity, he had 12 disciples. 5. One was named Matai, which is very similar to Matthew. Okay. And then the other ones don't really have a connection. The other ones were Nakai, Netzer, Boni, Toda. And they brought Matai, and they killed all his disciples too, which did not happen according to the New Testament. They brought Matai, Amr Lahom, Matai Yoharag. So he said to them, you're going to kill Matai? It says, Mosai Ovo Be'era Pnei Elokim. Right? A play on words of Mosai and Matai. Now, he said, the sentence says, when will I come and see God's face? I obviously am a person who shouldn't be killed. Amr Lahom, Mosai Yoharag. They said, yes, we're going to kill you. Because there's another pasuk. The pasuk says, Mosai Yomus Ve'ibet Shmo. When will he die and his name will be eradicated? So there's a pasuk using the word Masai that speaks about executing people. Asula Nakai. They brought Nakai. Amar Luhu, Nakai is Yahori. You're going to kill me, Nakai? And this pasuk says, V'noki v'tzadik al-tarog. A innocent person you don't kill, Noki. So Noki and Nakai sound similar. Amar Luhin, Nakai Yahori. The Siva Mistorim Yahori Noki. Right, in the hidden places, they kill innocent people, but it says that you kill Maki. Asula Netzer, Amarlo Netzer Yoharig, Aksiva Netzer Misharosh of Yifrach, that a shoot will come from his roots. This refers to the Mashiach. Amarlo in Netzer Yoharig, Aksiva Yatem Mishlachta Mikirbach, Aksiva Netzer Nitem. I'll throw you out like a disgusting shoot from a tree. Ashula Buni, they brought Buni, Amrilo, Buni Yahorek, Haksid, Bini Bechori Yisrael, my firstborn, Amrilo, in Buni Yahorek, the Sidi and Neri Yanoki Ogis, Bincha Bechorecha. So these are all play on words of sentences that seem to say positive things about these names and sentences that say negative things. Shula Toda, Amrilo, who Toda Yahorek, Haksid, Mizmor Lesoda, Amrilo, in Toda Yahorek. Okay. In any case, so that is this Gemara. According to this, they killed some Yeshu the day before Erev Pesach. They executed him, and he had 5 students, and he was killed because he was Mesis or Mediach Es Yisrael. It could be referring, according to some, to the founder of Christianity, and according to that, the Sanhedrin, in fact, killed him for being a Mesis or Mediach, somebody who tried to convince other people to serve idolatry, and according to their sources, we did not kill him. They brought him for trial in front of the Sanhedrin, and they gave him over to the Romans to kill. Okay, in any case, some other Midrashim that are not found in the Gemara and not in the reliable Midrashim, the codes of Midrashim that we know where their sources are, basically, but what are called the outside Midrashim, which are, there's a discussion whether they are reliable or not and who authored them. But there is a Midrash that speaks about one of the disciples of Yashka. And for a little bit of background, Christianity started as a Jewish sect, a messianic sect. They kept Shabbos. They kept most of the halachos. In fact, Yashka himself in the New Testament says, I did not come to change anything. No laws. Not even kutzo shel yud. Not even the point of a yud am I going to change. Now in Greek, that was translated to be even one iota, which is a Greek letter, small Greek letter, like the yud is a small, and therefore when you say not one iota, you are basically quoting the New Testament. You should realize that. That's where it comes from. The right. But in Hebrew also we say kutzo shel yud. It's also, in the Hebrew version, that's what it says. I didn't come to change even kutzo shel yud. On the other hand, there were things that he rebelled against, according to the New Testament. He was not matzah to wash his hands, netilas yodai, before eating bread. It seems like he was not careful of eating certain things that were not allowed to be eaten, whether they were prohibited by the Torah or just things that were tameh. And he said that it's not what goes into your mouth that makes a difference, it's what comes out of your mouth that makes a difference. That also some people quote, and that's also from the Christianity. He basically raised the rabble against the rabbis. He didn't like the institution and the authority of the Rabbanim. And the basic intelligentsia of Klal Yisrael didn't follow him. He was followed mostly by the ignorant masses. So in any case, originally it was a Jewish sect. If you look at the New Testament, that's clear. It was like that. And until about close to 200 years after his death, it remained like that, and it didn't really take off. Because in the New Testament itself, Yashka tells his disciples not to go and preach his word to the uncircumcised dogs. That's how he described the Goyim. But to go to the Jews and to preach to them. However, after his death, and they saw that the Jewish people, for the most part, did not accept him. Okay, most people were too intelligent to accept this guy as Mashiach, since he was dead anyway, and nobody ever heard of a Mashiach coming back after death, which they said, which has its parallels in other cases, which we won't go into today. In any case, so they pretty much did not accept him. And then, about almost 200 years after his death, two people who never saw him, Peter and Paul, not of rock music, yeah, right. But the original ones, they came and they changed the religion completely, and instead of going to Jews, they went to the Goy. Paul basically corrupted Christianity, and he realized the Jews aren't accepting this, so they went to the Goyim, who originally in the New Testament were called uncircumcised dogs. If I was a Goy and knew that that's what Yashka called me, I don't think I would want to embrace his religion. But in any case, they went, and we'll see in one second, the Romans embraced, many Romans embraced Christianity. And we'll see that eventually Christianity became Romanized and corrupted with a lot of paganism. And therefore it became completely not a, it had its roots in Judaism, but it was very, very different. They didn't keep Shabbos, they changed to Sunday, and so on and so on. But originally they kept Shabbos, they were basically a Jewish sect. So this Medrash says that when the Chachamim saw that this sect was attracting and confusing people, because it looked Jewish. They kept Shabbos, they wore tzitzis, they wore tefillin, right? Except they believed in Yashka as a Messiah. And it was a very dangerous thing, because people couldn't differentiate between authentic Judaism and this messianic sect. So they sent one of the Chachamim to corrupt Christianity and to make it not similar to Judaism. And his name was Shimon Kefa. His name was Shimon, right? And we'll see that he got a nickname later on. And he built a basilica, a tower in Rome, which became St. Peter's Basilica. He was the first pope, and he was a disciple of Yashka. And he was at one of the Chachamim, according to the Medrash. He used to sit up in this tower and sit and learn all day. And every once in a while he would come down, and he would tell them to change various laws that they had, slowly making it not a Jewish thing. For instance, told them to stop keeping Shabbos, to keep Sunday instead. And little by little, it became very obvious that this is not Judaism, and it was less dangerous to the Jewish people. They called him Peter. Why? Shepotar osanu mehanotzrim. Because he potered us, right? He relieved us of the Christians, that they weren't no longer a Jewish sect. And according to this Medrash, while he was up in that tower, at some point, he composed the Tefillah of Nishmas. But he really was a double agent. He was a shliach of the Chachamim to corrupt Christianity. Okay. And he was called Peter, Shepotar Osanu, or whatever. Whether this is reliable, authentic, or not, has a very big question mark. But it's an interesting medrash. Okay. Why did the Rabban Shom let Christianity be so successful? Before we get to that, one more interesting thing. We started this in the end of December, and it was really relevant then. Now it's the end of January. It's not all that relevant, but it's interesting also. In this idea that Christianity became paganized, and the Roman Empire eventually adopted it as its state religion, the Holy Roman Empire became a Christian, and we'll see in one second that's one of the reasons why it was very successful and why God wanted it to be successful. But Christianity became paganized. Now, this is not only something that I'm saying, but fundamentalist Christians, Southern Baptists, fundamentalist Christians say this. They say that Catholicism is basically Avodah Zarah, paganism, with all their statues and saints, and even the celebration of Christmas is a pagan holiday. And a Christmas tree is a pagan thing. It was taken from Roman culture. The Roman pagans used to have a midwinter holiday. And the Gemara speaks about it. It's one of the Roman holidays, Saturnalia, and I forgot what the name of the other ones, Gemara and Avodah Zarah. And the Gemara says like this, originally those holidays were founded by Adam HaRishon, the first man. What happened? When God decreed that Adam should die, so Adam thought he wasn't going to die immediately, but it was going to be a process, and eventually he's going to die. So he was created in Tishrei, on Rosh Hashanah, and he saw that after he sinned, and he was decreed to die, the days got shorter and shorter in the autumn towards the winter. So he assumed that this is his death, that slowly but surely night is going to totally obliterate the day, and that's he's going to leave this world in darkness. So he saw the days getting shorter and the nights getting longer and longer until around December 22nd. And around that time, he saw that the nights didn't get any shorter for a few days, and then the days began to get longer, and the nights not longer but shorter. And he realized this is not his death, he's not dying, this is the way of the world, this is the way God made nature. And he made a holiday for 8 days. For 8 days, one second, so as he saw the nights getting shorter and shorter up until December 22nd, he made an 8-day fast. Every day he fasted because he realized that this is it. It's really getting short and short and short days, and this is probably the end of my life. He fasted for 8 days. Then when he saw that the days started getting longer, he made an 8-day holiday of celebration. 8 days and 8 days. The next year, he made the 8 days that he fasted into a holiday and the 8 days that he celebrated into a holiday. And that was a holiday of B'nai Noach from Adam HaRishon, a holiday to God, celebrating the fact that when the nights get their longest, there's a time when the light again becomes overpowers the darkness. And those were the midwinter holidays of Adam HaRishon. The Romans made this into a holiday of Avodah Zarah. They took it. It was a Goyish holiday from Adam HaRishon, and they paganized it. And in certain places, the Norse used to bring in these logs or whatever and use them as idolatry. That's where the Christmas tree came from. When the Roman Empire became Christian, they didn't want to give up all their pagan customs. So they maintained this holiday, 8-day holiday, from December 25th till January 1st. And, something went here. This one. Should I turn this over? I don't know. From December 25th to January 1st is 8 days. They kept that holiday of Adam HaRishon, which was paganized by the Romans, and the Romans incorporated that into Christianity. Now, what do the Christians say? That he was born on December 25th, and his bris was on January 1st, 8 days later. So they're celebrating his birth and his bris. There's only one problem, and this the fundamentalist Christians say. If you look at the New Testament, it couldn't have been that Yeshua was born December 25th. Why not? Because the New Testament says that when he was born, there was a star that appeared, and the shepherds who were lying out in the fields followed that star to Beis Lechem, to Bethlehem, where they saw this baby in a manger, or whatever. Okay, that is something that you should have heard about, whatever. In any case, they were selling sukkah decorations of babies in mangers with shepherds. And I remember I first came to Eretz Yisrael, so I decided I'm not going to decorate my sukkah like I did in Chutz Laaretz. I'm going to get Israeli, you know, Eretz Yisrael sukkah decorations. So I got rid of my Chutz Laaretz decorations, and the first sukkahs I was here, I went to Meir Shorin to get Israeli sukkah decorations. And they had them all out on the tables, and all these Yerushalmi Yidden are around the tables, and I get closer to the table, and I said, something's wrong. These look very familiar to me. And as I get closer and closer, they look very familiar. They were Christmas decorations. In the original package, it said Merry Christmas on it. And all these Yerushalmis are buying it, because they never saw a Christmas tree. And at those times, for sure, the Russians weren't here, and the Muslims don't have Christmas trees. The only Christmas tree was in Beis Lechem. Who went to Beis Lechem? And they were buying them up as if they were, I'm sure they had no idea that they were Christmas decorations. In fact, I'm sure that Yerushalmi, who would go to America on December 25th, would say, hey, these goyim stole our sukkah decorations. But I was sure I was going to go into Mei Yesharim on Chol HaMoed and see a sukkah decorated with a little baby and a few shepherds standing around, right, in a manger. And they would say, see, a whole mishpacha, right, a ganz feine, you know, sukkah decoration. So the so that was what it says in the New Testament concerning his birth. Now, we live here in Eretz Israel, okay? You know what the weather is like in December, right? December 25th. There are no shepherds sleeping outside with their sheep in December 25th, okay? It's not Shabbat. It doesn't happen. You know when the shepherds sleep with their sheep outside? In the autumn, Sukkot time, a little bit before that. So they say it's clear that Yashka was born in the autumn, the end of the spring, when shepherds were out with their flocks sleeping. That's what it says. It's impossible that he was born in the middle of December, the end of December. It's not Shiloh. Just the weather conditions don't, and they therefore don't celebrate Christmas. They say that Christmas is a pagan holiday that the Catholics paganized, took into Christianity, and they corrupted the original Christianity, and they are the original Christians, the fundamentalist, Baptist, whatever. And they consider the Catholics Ovdei Avodah Zarah, idol worships. In any case, so this is not only our tradition that this is not his birthday, but it was taken from a holiday that was paganized by the Romans, but originally was made by Adam HaRishon for HaKadosh Baruch. Originally it was a godly holiday of Adam HaRishon, not of Jews, of Goyim. In any case, and that's why it's an eight-day holiday. So that's an aside. Okay, now, why the Rambam says that even though Christianity was obviously not God's will, this is not the religion that he wants for Goyim, because he wants Goyim to keep seven mitzvahs and to believe in God and not to believe in a trinity and whatever. But he permitted this to be very successful in an unusual way, how it spread both Christianity and Islam, spread over the whole world. The Rambam says the following reason. The Rambam says that God wanted knowledge of the Torah to spread all over, to prepare the way for Mashiach. That when Mashiach comes, he's going to let the whole world know that there's one God, there's a Torah, there's a Jewish people, they have seven mitzvahs to keep, and all of this is contained in the Torah. Now, if we would have had to prepare the way, so we would have had to send people to deepest Africa, and we would have been in the pots of the cannibals, not the Christian missionaries. So the Rebbe Shlom had Rachmanis on us, and he permitted this religion to take off. He didn't make Yashka make a new religion. But once he did it, God took it and used it for his own ends, permitted it to spread all over the world, and this way, he says, and then Islam, the same thing, they all have in their religion Judaism, meaning the Torah about Adam and Chava, and both the Koran has that, and the New Testament is tacked on to the Old Testament, which is the Torah. And this way people know that there's a Torah, that God gave the Torah on Har Sinai, there was 10 plagues, and there was a Jewish people who were chosen. They just believe that we were rejected, and they were chosen in our place. Okay. And they added on things. But they spread over the whole world a knowledge of the Torah, which would not have been had the world been just a bunch of pagans. And it definitely is an improvement over paganism. The Maisa, they do have laws that are supposedly, at least, socially very good, not like pagans who were sacrificing their children and doing all kinds of terrible, depraved things, at least Christianity and Islam, claim to have some kind of organized society, believe in a God, and believe that there are seven mitzvahs they have to keep, or mitzvahs they have to keep, right, which have some semblance of morality. Okay, whether they keep them or not, corrupt is a different story. But at least they adhere to a morality which is similar. They even call it Judaic Christian ethics, some kind of similarity. It's much better than paganism. So it's a step towards the world reaching its completion, and God permitted it in order that they should spread the word of Torah. So when Mashiach comes, most of the people in the world will know about these things. They won't have to be taught about it, something never heard of. They heard about these things, except they make mistakes and corrupted it. So all Mashiach will have to do is correct the mistakes. He won't have to introduce to the world something totally new. So that's what says the Rambam. And the truth is that they do believe in many of the things that we believe in. They just add to it and corrupt. I once had a woman come to me, and she told me she wants to convert to be Jewish. So the first question I ask a prospective convert is, what religion are you now, and why are you dissatisfied with your religion? So she said she's a Catholic. So I said, then why don't you want to remain Catholic? Why do you want to become Jewish? So, you know, sometimes the answers we get clearly tell us that this is not a candidate for gayers. Right? It's like, well, I really want to eat lox and bagels, and I heard you have to be Jewish to eat lox and bagels. So it's okay. You can eat lox and bagels without being Jewish. You don't have to convert. This one was the classical answer. She says to me, because Catholicism forces us to believe things that I just can't swallow. I just can't believe in them. So I assume she's talking about the fact that a man could be God, that there could be a virgin birth, immaculate conception, right? So I asked her, I said, could you give me an example of something that the Catholic religion forces you to believe that you can't accept? She said, yes, the splitting of the Red Sea. I said, you know, I hate to tell you this, but we were the ones who went through the Red Sea. She said, you guys believe in that too? I said, not only do we believe in it, but we are the ones who went through the Red Sea. And I'll tell you something else, the Muslims also believe in it. It's part of their religion too, to believe in Yetzias Mitzrayim and Kriyas Yamsuf. So don't ever try to become a Muslim either. So forget about Judaism, forget about Catholicism, forget about Islam. If that's what's bothering you, you better go find someplace else, but it's nice knowing you, and hope you find what you're looking for. So they believe in it too. That's the Rambam. The Rambam says, they per se, the Rabbam shall let them do our dirty work. Spread the Torah with a lot of misconceptions, but at least the world knows there is a God. They know there is such a thing. They're the ones who had to go and send missionaries all over the world. And we were basically, when Mashiach will come, they'll have an easier time of letting the world know, because they've heard about Messiah. They expect such a thing. They expect him coming back. Now they'll find out he's coming for the first time. It's not the one they were expecting. I heard from Rav Chaim Dov Rabinowitz, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. He is a historian. He wrote the Sefer Das Sofrim on Tanakh. He also wrote the Das Sofrim, a history book, a Jewish history. He was a scholar. He lived in Cleveland, and he had connection to Telzi Yeshiva. He told me once the following theory that he had, why the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted Christianity to be successful. He said, at the time, that time in history, the Romans were becoming disenchanted with idolatry. They were becoming much more sophisticated, and idolatry was childish. They couldn't believe anymore in this pantheon of gods, and it wasn't something sophisticated enough. And we find in the Gemara that at that time, very sophisticated, the intelligentsia of Rome, Roman senators, were converting to Judaism. Uncalus was one of those who converted. but were there many other instances in the Gemara of very important Roman figures that converted to Judaism. And he said that's what was happening, that the Romans, there was only two choices. There were pagans and it was Jews. There weren't any other religions. There was a bunch of different pagan religions. So either you were a pagan or you were a Jew. We were Ivrim. We were at one side and the whole world was on the other side. So they had no other option except to become Jewish. And as individuals became Jewish, so they were incorporated into the Jewish people, were Gerim, and became full-fledged Jews. But God was afraid that eventually the entire Roman Empire would adopt Judaism, like in the end it adopted Christianity. Because as they became more and more disillusioned with their paganism, more and more people were converting. It came a time when the Roman Caesar decided that he is going to convert and make this whole empire Christian. That would have happened had there not been a Christianity. It would have happened to Judaism. And what did they do to, what did the Romans do to Christianity? They paganized it. Like I told you, Christmas became a holiday, even though it had nothing to do with Christianity. It was a pagan holiday that they adopted. And in fact, I think that even the Catholics admit that it basically had pagan roots, but they say that they now made it godly. They took that pagan thing and turned it into something holy. So they also recognize that there were a lot of pagan influences in early Christianity, but they look at it as they made them holy. They sanctified them. Right. But in any case, the Trinity has its roots in paganism. This idea of three gods in one or whatever, which they can't explain too much what that means. If God is one, then how could he be three? But in any case, that also has its roots in paganism. So and that's why Christianity is considered Avodah Zarah, considered idolatry, Catholicism. Protestantism doesn't believe 100% that Yeshua was a god, and therefore it's possible that Protestantism is not Avodah Zarah. Surely could be fundamental Christians could be don't believe that Yeshua was mamash a god. It depends, but the Rambam holds that Catholicism is Avodah Zarah. Islam is for sure not Avodah Zarah. They don't believe in anything but one god. They don't allow any statues, nothing. They're even more machmer than we are. Mm-hmm. So the Rabbanu Shalom therefore permitted Christianity to be successful. So like throwing a bone to the dogs. Instead of adopting Judaism and corrupting it, God gave them Christianity to adopt, let them corrupt that. To keep Yiddishkeit pure. The same thing happened later on, about 600 years later with Islam, only in the other part of the world, in the Arab part of the world. The Arabs were also idol worshippers. They used to worship idols at Mecca, and Mohammed pulled them away from idolatry. His religion is belief in one God, belief in Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob with a host of other people. Right, including Yashka and including him, but not as gods, as prophets. And they saw Islam as a completion of these earlier prophets and the perfection of the religion, and Muhammad being the ultimate prophet. But they believe in Moshe Rabbeinu, and they have in the Koran, there's a lot of things, not only the Torah, there's a lot of things from the Gemara that they have. For instance, they have to wash their hands, and if what's it called, and if they don't, they can use sand. Midi the monkey. Just mamish, a lot of things taken from the Gemara at that time already. And the truth is that Mohammed also, if you study early Islam, Mohammed intended his religion for Jews, not for the pagans. because he never thought the pagans would accept it. But it was a continuation of the Jewish religion, just accept me as a prophet. Except, for some reason, we didn't want to accept a prophet who couldn't read and write, who had some dream in a cave once, that when an angel came to him. So most Jews, like, you laughed it off. In fact, in the beginning, Islam did not fast on Ramadan. They fasted on Yom Kippur, because they wanted to make it a religion very similar to Judaism, so Jews would accept it. Except when Mohammed saw that he couldn't sell it to Jews. They were too smart. So then he went to the pagans. And then he decided that he couldn't convince them intellectually, so he devised a very philosophical argument that convinced the masses of idol worshippers. He went something like this: accept my religion or I'll cut off your head. And many people found that to be extremely convincing. And so his religion spread also. In any case, but the same thing. Had it not spread, they would have had one option: to adopt Judaism. And then the Arabs would have corrupted Judaism. So God threw them a bone. And he gave them a religion for themselves, which is definitely better than paganism. Okay? And
better than Christianity.
And probably better than Christianity. I'm not sure. They have good competition of who's worse.
Yeah.
Who's been worse to us. Right?
Okay.
They're fighting over us. In any case, so this is his idea, that the Rabbanu Shel Olam gave these religions so they could be adopted by pagans at different times in history in order that Judaism doesn't become corrupted. That they adopt this, and it definitely is an improvement, and like the Rambam says, it helps to bring the world closer to Mashiach being able to come in a more natural way rather than having to re-educate the whole world to things they never heard of. Okay. That pretty much is what I want to speak about Christianity. We will go back to Judaism next week and continue the Mishnah and Mirza Hashem, hopefully finish it a few weeks from now.